Good morning. God is love. And I love to play around with phrases and words. And for me, love is God. Whenever we experience love, we're experiencing God. That's when we know we're in the presence. It's a lot less complicated than we think, life, really. That just when we're in love, we're in God. And we're experiencing the presence. So all our lives, we just need to be looking for more and more love. And then we're more and more in the presence of God. Just wanted to finish. Val is always my editor and completer and finisher of things, and because I don't finish things. And there were a couple of things I didn't finish yesterday, stories I tell, and I don't get to. It's like Anders, I'm sure, you know, he's very good at punchlines, but somehow I'll never get quite to the punchline of things sometimes. And I just wanted to say a bit more about that headmistress that I talked about. Miss Nobbs was her name, and she was a single woman, lived on the village green in a schoolhouse. And she was someone whose yes meant yes and no meant no, and someone you could trust. And she knew how much I loved soccer. And the one and only time, I was about nine, we had a proper match against another school. Never had one before. First match it was going to be. And she went out the classroom for a moment. She said, "I'm just leaving the classroom and I don't want any talking." Now, a nine-year-old boy who's anticipating a soccer match that never played in before, really looking forward to it, and you're telling him not to talk. And when she came back into the room, there's always a child, isn't there, in the classroom that says, "Please, miss, he did, she did, whatever." And there was one who said, "Please, miss, when you were out the room, Alan was talking." And so she said, "Right, Alan, you are not playing in the soccer match." And it broke my heart. A few years back, we went back to the little school. It was a very tiny school. There were just 3 classrooms and 10 children each year in the classroom. That was the privilege I had of growing up in that small group of people. And I just went and touched the wall where I just sobbed and sobbed up against, really. But her no meant no. And I trusted her no as much as I trusted her yeses. And so that balance of masculine and feminine, and I look back to that time when her no meant no, and I could trust that. And many times in my life, people have not meant what they said, really. And I look for, first of all, not for them to trust them. I need to trust me. I need to trust the God in me, and my no to mean no, and my yes to mean yes. And I think when Jesus said, "Let your yes be yes and your no be no," if it just left the planet at that point, it would have been enough. It would have been enough. Because if we really think about our yes meaning yes and our no meaning no, life would be absolutely wonderful for us. But we get caught in this grey world in between where we use this phrase, "Oh, I've changed my mind." Well, why did we change our mind? Did we not mean what we said to ourselves? And how often broken relationships have come about through promises broken. The marriage ceremony, and I promise, and I promise. You didn't mean it. And you didn't mean it. And how many women have I sat with, and how many men have I sat with, whose parents did not love them, who a husband did not love the wife did not love the husband, because they didn't know what love was. So we substitute for the real thing. So many areas in our life. I mean, it's interesting, you know, when Burns was talking about the fourth dimension, because I think we experience the fourth dimension more than we realize. But we live in this surreal, invented world that we've created as a substitute for the real kingdom of God. And we settle for less. We always settle for less. Anyway, Miss Nobbs, coming back to her. And if I had to choose someone to grow up and live with, if not in a children's home, but to live in her schoolhouse and her be my mother and father, I would want that woman to be my mother and my father, because I could trust her completely. And on that day, she said to me, as we were all crying, the class were crying, there were just 10 of us in the class, but we were a family. And, you know, one of the lights of the family was going out. That's how those children saw that. And so there was all these tears, and she just said to me, "Alan, you're a very special boy, and you'll grow up to be a very special man." And I never, ever forgot that. In my bleakest times, I've never, ever forgotten that. And she gave me a letter, and she said, "Alan's a letter," and she gave me a book called Swallows and Amazons by Arthur Ransom, just about a family going on the river. And but it was about a family. And within a few days of arriving at the children's home with that letter, which was about Alan and who Alan was, and who knew Alan better than her, nobody knew me better than her. That's the importance of school teachers. That sometimes they will know us and see something in us that nobody else, not even our parents, sees in us. But they look at us from a different angle and a different place, and will see promise in us that others can't see. So be thankful for those souls in your childhood. Remember something that somebody has said to you that you've held on to. And I held on to that. But within a few days of arriving in the children's home, that letter, I never knew what was in the letter, ever. Never saw the letter. And the book disappeared within days. And it was like, Byrne said to me yesterday, "Alan, is there a favourite essay of Emerson's?" And I said a couple, but I didn't mention this one. And I would recommend it to you, Circles by Emerson. Read that essay on Circles. And that letter disappearing, and I never knew what was in it, and that book disappearing was the closing of a circle, because I never heard from anybody in my childhood again. I never saw them again, never heard from them again. So it was the closing of a circle. And my life has been a series of circles like that. And sometimes we need to know and celebrate when a circle is completed and we move on into the next one. And Ian, bless him, has been in my circle since our adolescence. And so some people remain in our circles, and some we leave behind. And we need to say goodbye to them and wish them well, even those that have done us harm. And what I love about, I've struggled with the whole concept of forgiveness for years, until I realized, I sit with a lot of people that struggle to forgive those that have abused them, sexually abused them, physically abused them, verbally abused them, and so on. And they'll say to me, "Alan, what about forgiveness?" And my response to them now is, if they knew better, they would have done better. If they knew better, they would have done better. And they would have done differently. And that took me to the words of Jesus on the cross. "Forgive them, Father, because if they knew better, they would have done better." So sometimes we don't have to fling our arms around the perpetrators. We just need to release them to God and say, "Father, if they knew better, they would have done better. I know that now. I let them go." That, to me, is forgiveness. So let your yes be yes and your no be no, and don't let anybody else speak your yes for you or your no for you. Your responsibility is to say the yes that's deep in you and the no that's deep in you. And only God are you answerable to. And it's been really freeing for me to know that as God was my father and mother, they were the only two aspects in life that I was responsible to and answerable to. Nothing came in between that. And there was once somebody, we were in this church, when I was in my 30s, we were in this church fellowship, and the leader said to me, he'd spent a few weeks working in a children's home, and he knew of my background, and he said to me, "Alan, you will never trust anyone, and you'll never have any long-term friendships." And also that same person struggled with the fact that Alan never looked to him as leader. Alan has never looked to anybody as leader, because I have God as my father and mother, and I will listen only to what God says to me. If what somebody says in the external world to me equates and balances and harmonizes with the God in me, then that's fine. But somebody who says, no, you will never be, no, you will never, somebody trying to limit me, when the Spirit is given without limit. Think about that. The Spirit is given to us without limit. So why do we accept limitations? Why do we accept any limitations of death, of loss? Why do we accept limitations of our potential? And I'll come on to that a bit later. So there are a number of single women that I want to thank. There's Miss Nobbs. There's Auntie Audrey, Auntie Olive. And in this bleak period, this famine period, of this emotional famine that I experienced between the ages of 10 to 15, there were two women, three women actually. There were two single women, Miss Gardner. It's interesting, isn't it, how so many single women volunteered to work with children to actually fulfill that maternal need in them still, that unmet maternal need that needs to be met somewhere. And so they'll work and teach in school and so on, to be around children and become social workers, whatever, to actually get that maternal need filled in them, but to be able to exchange that love that is within them and give that love out to others. And so I have had a number of mothers. So yes, I was born with one mother that was a very depressed mother and unable to love. Although I did hear from a relative that apparently up until the age of two, as much as she could, I remember your mother, he said to me, she was always carrying this little blonde baby around with her and never letting go of him. And that was me. And coming back to attachment theory, the first 2 years in life, if you were held and contained and loved in those first 2 years of life, that's enough. That's more than enough. So I can see now with Miss Pearson and Miss Gardner, who were two women that showed me kindness, and Mrs. Cox, who taught me how to play rounders, which was the forerunner of baseball. And I used to love playing that. The only boy amongst all these girls, it was a girls' game in England, but I didn't care. What I loved was baseball, and, you know, I joined in every Friday night for 5 years. And that was wonderful, so thanks to her. These wonderful women that gave me such a good start in life. So when I told the story the other day about the school teacher, who he was the woodwork teacher, and he observed very quickly that Alan was very lethal and dangerous to be in a woodwork class. Do not give him a chisel. Do not give him a saw. Do not give him any sharp implements at all. He was very dangerous. So he very kindly used to give me notes to travel around the school with. So I would so he would just say, Alan, could you take this note to this class or that? And just got me out of the classroom, really. So he saw, and I love the fact that somebody can see the potential in you and someone can see the opposite to that. And keep everybody safe. Yeah, so. But when Colin, he was a lovely, kind man, unusual for sports teachers, really. Sometimes they're fierce and angry people, and they're bullies, and then I had one like that. But he was a lovely man, lovely, gentle soul, and he was a real close friend of Bert's. So you can see those two, how they would be gentle together. And when Colin said to me, Alan, would you join my football team? That yes, that came from the deep of me. I only had one yes in me at that time. Somebody saying, Alan, do you want to play soccer? That was the only stability. Bear in mind, I've been playing it since I was 3-4 years of age. It's the only thing that I had the strongest relationship with. I could always trust, give me a ball, give me a stone, I'd kick that. It didn't matter. But just give me that thing that I loved. And so when somebody said, Alan, do you want to carry on doing what you loved? What a silly question. And so I said yes to that thing that made my heart sing. And in saying that yes, that led me to Bert Curley. Just that one yes led me to Bert Curley. And just talking about my doing led me to Val and Ian and so on, but I'm just talking about my doing world for a moment. What would Alan become in terms of his doing world? And one day Bert said to me, I think I was in my 40s, and he said to me, Alan, there's a weekend. Bert became a counsellor and working with families and so on, and in a place called Greenwoods in Stock and in Essex. And he said, Alan, there's a weekend talking about families and so on. He said, you know, and helping families. You might be interested. That was Bert's way. You might be interested. Never said, told me who I was. Alan, you might be interested. So I went along. And Bert introduced me to the concept of counselling and working with vulnerable people and so on. And the person that was in charge of that place was called Tony Knowles, a friend of Bert's. And when I finished my therapy training, I was 49, and then I finished it when I was 53. And I got a phone call from this Tony, who I'd never met, who said to me, Alan, Bert tells me that you've now completed your training. Would you like to come and work at Harman House, which is this place in Dagenham, which for 16 years I'm still managing? Tony was the manager then temporarily. And after a few months, they invited me to say, Alan, would you like to manage this place? So 16 years on my doing world, I'm now in this work with these people. All started with that yes to Colin to play soccer. That one yes has carried me all the way through to now. Just one yes has brought me all the way through to now. Because that's what God wants for us here and now. To say yes to those things that he put in our heart from the very beginning. Our divine plan is still unfolding to us. But we are distracted and looking elsewhere out there for it. But our divine plan is what brings us joy. What makes our heart sing. If it doesn't make your heart sing, don't do it. Because it's not in your plan. Because love is about joy and peace and beauty and contentment. And if those things aren't in your life, then you're doing the wrong things. You're in the wrong job. You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong family. If you're not experiencing joy, you're in the wrong family. Isn't that the wonderful thing about CFO? That there is this anonymous family. Anonymous family that we can all join and be a part of and receive the joy that it can bring us. Or not. If we're not in a place to receive joy, that's okay. We can gradually thaw, like I did over the years, and gradually respond to the joy that's there. Isaiah 1. All my life I've wanted to be asked this question, what kind of man? And those words of being a very special man. Well, what is a very special man? What is it to be a man? And I do think that in the world today, what is it to be a man is a very important question. Only from the cultural point of view that somehow men end up in leadership places, which I personally don't agree with. I think the right people should be in the leadership places. Should have nothing to do with gender. The right people, the wisest people should be leading. And wisdom is feminine. Sophia, wisdom is feminine. So if men are in leadership places, they need to get in touch with the wisdom inside them, which is in the feminine and not in the masculine. So what kind of man would I like to be? And I came across these words in Isaiah 1. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Reprove the ruthless. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. And that's the work I do. That is the work I do. And I love that story that Burns told about the little boy running towards the train. And This word orphan, I often say to people that I'm working with, when they've grown up in a family that's absent of love, I say to them, so you're an orphan? No, I had a mum and dad. I said, no, you're an orphan because you weren't loved. And some of us are emotional orphans. We're orphans. And sometimes it's language and words are very powerful. And we need to describe sometimes the right word that describes what we feel and who we are at times. If we're orphans, then be orphans. And then create the space within you. When you say you're an orphan, an emotional orphan, then there's a space that opens up in you to be filled. But unless you say that word that opens those doors, and it is like the open sesame, we need to find the right word that is the key to open the door to create that room that God can fill. So back to those 5 years of famine between the age of 10 to 15. And never discount a moment in your life as not being worthwhile. Because for me, those 5 years of moving from this feminine creative Alan that I was. I mean, Miss Nobbs encouraged the creativity in me. And I remember, you know, the creative, she said, right, we're going to have an essay today. It's a competition. There's a box of Rose's chocolates. And I'm sorry, for all the wonder that is in America, your chocolates are rubbish. Miss Nobbs says the prize for this essay for the winner is a box of Rose's chocolates. And they're beautiful, Rose's chocolates. And I wanted that box of chocolates. And I'm very competitive. But she opened in me. She encouraged me to read Huckleberry Finn, Mark Twain, Alexander Dumas, The Three Musketeers. As a boy, to read The Three Musketeers. But the profundity in some of these writings, because I was one of 22 children, and each one of us had a story. No one could compete with another to say, actually, my story is more tragic than yours. Every one of us mattered. Each of us had our story. And some, even these very young children, 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age, we knew somewhere that each one of us mattered, that there was no hierarchy. I don't believe in hierarchy. I do believe in the least. And the Three Musketeers, all for one and one for all. That's how I see the human race. Everyone on the planet, all for one and one for all. What has war got to do with that? Keeping it simple. Alan's always keeping it simple. All for one and one for all. If one hurts, we all hurt. If one's in pain, we're all in pain. If one is sick, we're all sick until they get well. And we should not accept anybody being sick. And so, in the quote from Isaiah, reprove the ruthless. And the ruthless is the absence of Ruth, not some beautiful woman in the Bible or some beautiful woman called Ruth. But Ruth is another word for good, for love. Yeah. So to be ruthless is to be absent of that, absent of love, absent of good. To be psychopathic, to be absent of love. And so, when our daughter was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2007, and she had at that time, she had 3 boys. One was 4, one was 2, and one was 9 months old. And she's 24. And I'd learned through my life, through those 5 years of 10 to 15, that I could stand. That lovely verse in the Bible that says, having done all, stand. Stand. Do not drop to the floor. You stand and you keep on standing. And I learned to do that between the ages of 10 and 15. I would stand and I would survive and I would know how to do that. And this same man once, leader of this church, one of his friends said to me, Alan, we can't touch you. There's a part of you that is a rock inside and we can't get to the heart of you. And I said to him, that rock is none of your business. That rock is where I stand. And I've learned since, you stand on your own rock. You find the rock in you and you stand on that. That rock is none of your business because that rock is the God in me. Nothing to do with you. So when somebody tries to seek power over you in any way, find that rock and you stand on it. So reproving the ruthless, when Louise was diagnosed with cancer and these lovely boys and the family and so on, of course I had moments of fear, but I would not move into fear because I had learned to deal with fear. When our son had his kidney problems, when his brother, his twin brother, identical twins they were, and the twin brother Ian, Stuart is the name of the two-year-old, coming up to 44 now, Ian's our other son. And we named Ian after Ian. And they both got the same spirit. And Ian at 18 started to have seizures at 18. And we were taking him for tests and so on. And we heard that awful, fearful word, brain tumor, possibly. And so living with the fear of that. And then wonderful news that it was a bleed in the brain, which he still has tablets for, and that creates seizures. But basically, so all three of our children being in those life-threatening situations. And then Louise coming along. But I would not move into fear. It's not whether we experience fear, it's how long we stay there, how long we stay in it. So don't be embarrassed at all by being in fear. It's how long we stay with it. We need to learn to stand. And so I would be that rock that whatever was going on in the family, I would be that rock. I would not yield to what was going on. And what I'd learned from Glenn Clark and other writings, that I did not believe in death. I only believe in life. Death is a transition for me. It's just a different world, a different place to live in. And during the time of Louise going through her treatment, one of our counselors said to me, Alan, what do you think about death? And I just came out with this, I do not believe in it. Because I'm reproving the ruthless. Cancer is ruthless. And it needs to be reproved, and it needs to be challenged, and it needs to be decided to be unacceptable. And it is unacceptable. All illness is unacceptable. And when that oncologist said, I'm just going to put this poison into your body, to my daughter's body, and it will kill off all the remaining. And I just had this lovely vision of this liquid running round, chasing after these cells. I mean, when we were children in the woods, we would chase after each other to try and catch each other, play touch, play catch, whatever you call it over here. We used to call it play catch. Run and touch someone and so on. And I just saw this poison traveling around Louise's body, chasing after every one of these cells, making sure that it got caught and eliminated. Because that's how you reprove the ruthless. You sit in the truth of things. When Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, I have learned that I need to find the I am in me and then find the way, the truth, and the life. And that's what we all need to find. We need to find the I am in us. And then say, I am well. I am healthy. When we start to move into the I am, there is no such thing as sickness in the kingdom. There is not. And if you want to live in the kingdom, then you need to start facing some of the challenges of living in the kingdom, which is to embrace the truth that in the kingdom, sickness does not exist. And we just haven't yet. I mean, I love the definition of miracles that somebody, I can't remember exactly where it came from, but the definition of miracles, they're just undiscovered laws. They're just undiscovered laws that Jesus knew about and some great souls have known about. And if only we would go deeper, we would know about. We just need to go deeper and discover these undiscovered laws. Like the law of gravity. In the spiritual world exists spiritual laws. Another wonderful essay of Emerson's, Spiritual Laws. And so Louise, bless her now, when she experienced the cancer, she was 18 months into a degree, English literature degree. And so that what got suspended while she had her treatment and so on. And after that treatment was completed, she then went on to complete her degree. And then she's now a qualified teacher. And she's an inspirational. Louise, well, we didn't know that, we just loved the name Louise, but we then discovered later on that the name Louise means courage. That's my daughter, that's our daughter. And she's now a teacher, and those children that she's going to be teaching in the new class, she's so excited, she's got a new class. She's got her own classroom and she's got a desk. And she said to me, Dad, when you go to America, she discovered Emerson a couple of months ago, didn't know that her dad had been studying Emerson for 20 years. And that my bookshelves are full of Emerson books about Emerson, Emerson's essay, the whole thing of Emerson. I found this quote, Dad, by this bloke called Emerson. She put it on Facebook. And so she said, can you bring me something back? And we went into the Concord Museum. She wants to put it on her desk. And it says, Emerson, one of my favourite quotes of Emerson, insist on yourself. Insist on yourself. Never imitate. Insist on yourself, never imitate. What a wonderful message for the children that are going to be in her class. Insist on yourself. Whoever that might be, insist on yourself. Never let anybody else. And I don't know if you've heard of Ben Okri, but Ben Okri, called The Unfamished Road, he wrote a book, he got the Booker Prize in England years and years ago, Nigerian poet. And he's written a wonderful poem called To an English Friend in Africa. And it's, live while you're alive. Be who you are in the seed of your spirit. Be who you are in the seed of your spirit. So within you is some unique plant that is meant to grow, that there's never been a plant on the planet like you. A seed in the deep of your spirit. That if you only live from that place, if you live from the deep of your spirit, then you would water and feed that seed in a way that you don't do now. And I see CFO as a watering place. Really, potentially. We can open up and allow that water to come through and feed that seed in our deep in our spirit. And it will grow in what it needs to grow. But you need to feed it. You cannot allow anyone else to feed it. You need to feed it. It's your responsibility. That's how we're made by God. To feed our souls, we have to do that. We have to give birth to the child that's within us. We have to give birth to that child that's deep within us, that spiritual child that is waiting to live and to grow and to actually change the planet. We're here to change the planet. That's what we're here for. We're here, souls at this particular time, to make a difference, to bring God to the planet in this generation. Jeremiah, I love Jeremiah. Maybe it's to do because the loneliness that he, whatever it was, but I identify with that separation that he experienced. But the poetry, the metaphors, fantastic. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord. And then he says this, and whose trust, as if to repeat it, and whose trust is the Lord. Trust in the Lord, but whose trust is the Lord. That my trust in God is inseparable. Yeah, that's the first place I go. Is there. Not out there, in there. Not in the outer, but in the inner. Go immediately into the God inside you and trust that. It's a rock that will support you because God enables us to stand on the heights. And one of my favorite lines in a Paul Simon song, I am a rock, I am an island. And we are. And although John Donne says no man is an island, no person is an island, actually there are times when we are. Because sometimes we need to separate ourselves from the outer to go into the inner. And there it's just us and God. And we need to spend much more time with us and God away. Why do you think Jesus went up into the mountains so often? Let me get away from these people. Let me get away from their fears. Because he felt so deeply. And some of you, there's a book in it, you know, that I don't know if you know, heard of this book, but there's a book that's going the rounds in England. It's a very profound book. And it's called The Highly Sensitive Person. And I'd recommend it to some of you. I think Val can look it up on her phone if you need to know the author. But there are some of us that are much more deeply sensitive. Van Gogh was one. There are many souls that are deeply sensitive. And this world is very painful for those kinds of people. Very, very painful. And I would encourage those people that are highly sensitive to respect and stay with your sensitivity, because you are souls that are much needed on the planet. Carl Jung studied people with schizophrenia and tried to develop schizophrenia for himself, because he felt that these people, these unique individuals, were tuning in somewhere in the ether that we were unable to tune into. Just like dogs can hear more powerfully than we can hear. And so there are still unknown things about human beings, still unsecrets that have yet to be revealed. I want to finish with Jeremiah. Blessed, this is Jeremiah 17, verses 7 and 8. Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord. For he will be a tree, like a tree planted by the water that extends its roots by a stream. He's not stupid enough to actually be where there isn't any stream to feed the roots. So a lesson there is find a stream that feeds your roots. If you're in somewhere where it doesn't feed your roots and you can't grow from it, get out of it and find a stream. Whether it's a family, whether it's a church, whether it's a job, whatever it is, relationships that need to be moved on from because they do not do you any good. They do not feed you. They are not a stream of life that feeds you. That's your responsibility to say no to that. Coming back to letting your yes be no and your no be no. I work with people that alcohol, what we call in the therapeutic trade, mother substitutes. Alcohol. Drugs, something just to dull the pain, to feel a sense of warmth, something, or to feel nothing. It serves both those purposes. Because in the absence of love, what else is there but these substances? And people often come and sit down in front of me and say, Alan, I really want to stop drinking. And my first response to them is, no, you don't. Because if you did, you would stop. because your no would mean no. But as yet, your no does not mean no. But I will help you get to a place where your no will mean no. Where you say no and reprove the ruthless. Where you say no to all that is not love. So extend its roots by a stream and will not fear when the heat comes. Will not fear when the heat comes. So when cancer came into our family life, and 2 years later, Val was diagnosed with breast cancer and had to go through the same treatment. And Val was aware that, and she may share some of her story, and it is well worth hearing in her own unique way. But Val was aware that maybe some of the aftermath of coping and the fears that came through with her beloved daughter triggered off. Some of the fears triggered off. Cancer, negative, the body experiencing negative emotions, and so on. There's still mysteries around all that we need to be aware of. We're still, medical profession only goes so far. But we need to know more. But when heat comes, I will not fear, because I learned not to fear and not to stay with fear. And so its leaves will be green and will not be anxious or fearful. That's, I'll add that. Will not be anxious or fearful in a year of drought, nor cease to yield fruit. And so sometimes our lives can feel like there's a drought of emotion, good emotion in our lives, a drought of love. There's a famine going on and we can't get enough love. We just get drops of it. We need to stay without fear during those times. Because what happened after I was 15, after just 5 years, what a deluge of love. At the age of 15, into my life came Bert Curley, Val, Ian, in 1 year. And it's never stopped. But I kept the leaves remaining green, keeping the hope. And again, in our counselling world, we talk about that one person in the room that is carrying the hope for the other until the other can discover hope. And then one day, I believe, we won't need hope anymore because we'll have arrived in the kingdom where hope becomes unnecessary. Thank you.